BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Ball Face Truth.
1 hour down, two to go on this Monday, just 3 weeks away from the first games for Oregon and Oregon State on the gridiron. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. John will be back Thursday. You can call in 503-417-7575. How does this season of epic expectation, go wrong for the Oregon Ducks? Let's exercise some negative thinking, shall we? Not to be pessimistic, but ready for all scenarios. There's so much hype. There's so much excitement. We've anointed these guys as college football playoff participants already. How does it go wrong for Oregon? Curious your thoughts. We'll talk about that a little bit more. How does it go right for Oregon State? I mean, so much unknown about the Beavers. What is a good football season for Trent Bray this year? Got to nail down expectations for the Beavers. Is it a number of wins? Is it what you want to see out of the quarterback position? Is it what you want to see out of the defense? Is it what you want to see out of the run game? That's mine. I want to see if they have a successful trench warfare run game in the first year post Jim Michalczyk. So I want to hear from you as well. You can tweet the show at 750 the game at Judah Newby and at Steven underscore VON. Steven, got through that whole first hour, talked about a whole bunch of different sidebars, tangents, and topics. Dodgers 1988 World Series run. I mean, incredible stuff. As random as it is, as that first hour was, we actually didn't get to three random things. So let's do it. Let's start it off.
Three random things.
All right. I did want to talk about this anyway, but did you see the drama around Vancouver, Washington's own Jordan Chiles and her bronze medal that she won in the vault? Did she or did she not win bronze? I mean, this is just bizarre gymnastics, full of twists and turns, but the unfolding saga over which gymnast officially wins bronze in the floor exercise final. Oh, it was floor, not vault. My apologies. It was floor. Has been more complicated than anyone expected. Jordan Chiles was stripped of her first individual Olympic medal after the Romanian gymnastics team challenged her final score. Team USA is appealing that ruling. That ruling was denied on earlier today. Their appeal was denied. So the battle from bronze, though, is far from over. It was already a nail biter. The Romanian gymnast Ana Barbosu and her teammate Sabrina Maneca Voinea, they were tied. They had a score of 13.700. So Chiles went out there, and by a mere tenth of a point, she bested that score. She confidently executed her floor routine to Beyonce, and all three athletes were awaiting the score. So Chiles initially got a score of 13.66. The Romanian duo got 13.7. So it put Chiles initially in fifth place. But as the stadium was erupting, USA Gymnastics coach Cecil Landy filed an inquiry over Chiles' difficulty score. Minutes later, Chiles was first to notice the judge's decision, and she leapt up and down as others gasped. The judges revised her score by a tenth of a point, and it gave Chiles a 13.766, and it vaulted her, pardon the pun, into bronze. But since then, Romania challenged the score, saying that it came 4 seconds after the 1 minute deadline for the, which is you get 1 minute to appeal the judge's score. And apparently, the U.S. appeal came 4 seconds too late. And therefore, the initial score should be upheld and Chiles should get fifth. Since then, there's been an appeals process behind the scenes. The Court of Arbitration for Sport, which I didn't even know was a thing, they upheld Romania's challenge. The U.S., their appeal was denied today. They've since come out with a statement saying, quote, "We are devastated. The inquiry in the difficulty value of Jordan Child's floor exercise routine was filed in good faith and, we believed, in accordance with the FIG rules to ensure accurate scoring." Childs has also been subject to utterly baseless and extremely hurtful attacks on social media. She posted to her Instagram story, four broken hearts, the emojis for four broken hearts, following the Court of Arbitration decision, and announced she would be taking a break from social media. This is really bizarre. Now the U.S. is saying they have time-stamped evidence to support their appeal, even though it's been denied. So there's a whole bunch of things going on here. Now, I'll tell you this, Stephen. The Olympics, they are over. Gymnastics was pretty awesome, and I always enjoy watching women's gymnastics. And Childs has a local tie to Vancouver, even though she's been training with Simone Biles in Texas for quite some time now. So there's some local, you know, interest in that. I know it was a little bit crazy that she won bronze and floor in the first place, but to have your bronze medal taken away like this, it asks a couple of questions. One, it's a reminder that any medal is important, even bronze. It's not just the golds. I mean, people love to medal, and then get the bronze medal is a big deal. And I'm kind of like, come on, Romania. You really want to win on a technicality, like this posthumous technicality, and break this girl's heart? Like, what a terrible way to win a bronze medal, for crying out loud. That's what I would say.
Instant replays is ruining all sports. That's what it is.
Well, is that what happened here?
I don't know. I mean, they're just challenging.
Blame instant replay.
The challenge system. Like, I get it. I get what you're saying by Romania. Like, what are you doing? But also, if I'm Romania and I think I'm right and I think I have a case, why wouldn't I challenge it? Like, that would be my question. Like,
yeah, but you're not challenging the routine. You're challenging the timing of the United States appeal.
Yeah.
Which I guess is part of the rules.
There are rules. Look, I don't like it. Like, I'm with you.
I think it's a really shady way to take somebody's bronze medal away.
I would be heartbroken if I was Childs. I would not do it if I was like Romania, like, because I'm with you. I wouldn't want to do it either. I wouldn't want to win that way. But some people are just wired to do that and say, look, we are going to follow the rules down to the T and not, you know, all the way. And they are. And they think that they have it on the United States, you know, proof that they can do it. So I don't know. It's a weird situation. And you just hope, you know, for me, as an American, I just want, you know, Jordan Childs to get the bronze medal and have her be happy with it because she deserved it.
Now, Romania was also arguing that all three gymnasts should get a bronze medal. Do you think that would be appropriate?
No.
Three bronzes.
There's no ties.
Have you seen that the high jump in Tokyo 3 years ago finished in a tie, and the athletes went crazy. They loved it. They each got a gold medal.
I hate it.
And then this year in the high jump, they had that same opportunity, and they decided not to share a gold medal. And they jumped off. I actually had to turn it off because it was going on too long. They tried to jump off for it. I think the American ended up getting silver.
It just depends on who you are. I mean, some people do like that. I would rather, you know, that's like when I'm gambling, do I like to cash out of my bet if it's winning at halftime? No, I don't. I want to win the whole thing because I think I'm good. I think the pick is right. And so that's just my mentality as an athlete as well. Like, I feel like I'm better than you are, so I feel like I'm going to beat you. And so I would never want to say, yeah, we're going to tie on purpose. I'm going to take half of this and say I won. I'm going to beat you fair and square, and I'm going to beat you. Like, that's just some people's mentality isn't built that way, but that's kind of what mine is. So, no, I would not like that. I wouldn't like the tie and have, you know, three different bronze and three different golds. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, that's right. Shelby McEwen, U.S. high jumper, he said one champion. So he had a chance to get a gold medal and have the other guy get a gold medal and basically share a gold, and he's a 28-year-old American.
And if I lose, I lose. And
yeah.
They were better than me that day, and I deserve to be second place, and that's fine. And I could live with that, but I don't know that I would be as excited to get a gold medal if it was a tie with somebody, and we just said, yeah, let's just split it.
He was in a jump-off against New Zealand's Hamish Kerr, and he decided, no, we're not going to split it. They're going to jump for it. And then the New Zealander ended up winning gold in that one. So I think the Chiles story, it looks like it's coming to an end, and it looks like she has to give up her bronze medal. So I don't want to say that there's more to come on this story. I mean, it looks like she's going to have to give up her bronze, which kind of sucks. And it paints the memory of her Olympic Games in a much different way. So, but if anything does come out on that, means she can keep her bronze, we'll try to let you know. But yeah, the Olympics wrapping up, and that was one of those lingering stories that got my attention. I thought, and that is very random, I would say. So that's my first random, a long-winded random thing to kick it off. Steven, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going with Jet pass rusher Hassan Reddick.
Jeez.
He requested a trade back in March. He got traded from the Eagles to the Jets for a 2026 conditional third-round pick, and the Jets are excited. You know, they're going to get one of the better pass rushers in all of football, 29-year-old. You know, he's gotten a lot of sacks. We saw him in that year the Eagles made the Super Bowl, been really good.
Yeah.
But
he was dominant.
But he wanted a new contract. Now, the Jets were under the assumption that he would play this season under his existing contract. Hassan Reddick said, no, I am not going to do that. He has not reported one time to the Jets practice facility. He's been there one time, actually, to the facility that was for the mandatory press conference after the trade. Besides that day, he has never once reported to the Jets facility. He skipped the entire offseason so far, including the mandatory minicamp, because he wants to get a new contract. The Jets did not want to give him that new contract because they thought they had him for the 1 year. So now Hassan Reddick has demanded another trade from the Jets to go somewhere else. So he demands a trade from the Eagles, and now he demands the Jets from the trade. So two trade requests in 4 months. Now, Jets Joe Douglas, general manager Joe Douglas, said that they don't plan on trading him, that they are going to get him and get him on the field and play with him that way. But Reddick, you know, he's been fined $50,000 a day for the last 21 days. He's looking to get a new contract. Daniel Hunter of the Texans, he signed a 2-year, $49 million deal in free agency. Those two are kind of looked as kind of, you know, equals on the pass rushing market with the sacks and their production. So Reddick trying to get a new contract. He's not getting it from the Jets. So he says, I want to be traded for the Jets, even though New York just traded for him in the last couple of months. I think it's a big loss if he doesn't purport to the Jets and play for them. The Jets kind of need him to go for that defense, I think, to really be elite. But we'll see what happens. Hassan Reddick, kind of a problem for the Jets and the Eagles.
So who do you blame in this one? I mean, I feel like the Jets, if they didn't know that Reddick wanted an extension, then they know less than I did. I mean, I knew that Hassan Reddick wanted an extension. You got to get that figured out when you're trading for the guy. So assuming that he would play this year without the extension, either they got bad intel from Hassan or his agent, or they're just being naive or ignorant or stupid, which I guess it's the New York Jets, so you never know with any of those things. But that's just foolish business if they expected anything else. Now, maybe they expected him to do this, and they just, hey, we're going to trade for you and play hardball with you at the same time. I would question that strategy just from an overall operations standpoint, but they're getting what they paid for then already, which is trading Bryce Huff for Hassan Reddick, and now potentially trading Hassan Reddick. Now, they say they're not going to do it, but we'll see. I mean, the Jets can, you know, twist themselves into all kinds of knots without even a shoelace being present, and it looks like they're doing that right here. By the way, for Hassan Reddick, for the year that he had a couple years ago, he should be looking for a new deal and a new contract. Like, he has earned that money to wherever he's playing, Philly, New York. The guy deserves to get paid for what he has delivered compared to the rest of the market. But if New York is just trying to play hardball with the guy, then he's going to play hardball. I mean, he's got no allegiances to this organization whatsoever.
Well, what do you think of just guys holding out anyways? Like, do you like the players have the ability to hold out and get as much money as possible? Or do you think they should live up to their contract of what they'd signed?
I mean, I'm a traditionalist, so
I say
play the contract. But I obviously realize that in this day and age, you know, there are margins with which to work. I look at a guy like Trent Williams. He's holding out. Like, he'll get it figured out. He's just trying to get the most guaranteed money he can at the end of his career. And the guy's played kick-ass football for a very long time. Like, that guy deserves it. Nick Bosa deserved to be able to hold out in order to get the deal that he wanted. He was that outlier of a player. I think the question
is, Hassan Reddick that type of player?
No, definitely not that type of player. But he's also been in the league a long time. And he deserves more money than he's probably getting compared to what he did at least 2 years ago. Maybe not so much last year. I think it's more of a process standpoint. Like, you guys traded for me, and you and Howie Roseman with the Eagles, like, I was led to believe that there would be extension talks when you traded for me. So to treat me like a one and done rental is not okay. Like, that was not part of the terms of the agreement. I'm sure his agent is saying a lot of this as well. So for the Jets, if they have really done no work in trying to work out an extension for him, like, shame on them. Like, they're getting what they deserved to get, because you knew the player that you were getting was going to be unhappy without an extension. Now you are living that unhappiness in real time. If you feel like you're a strong enough organization that you can withstand said unhappiness and be just fine, then we shall see. From a personnel standpoint, the Jets have a lot going for them. It's a defense with Quinnen Williams on it, with Jermaine Johnson, Will McDonald IV, Solomon Thomas, even Javon Kinlaw. They signed in free agency from the 49ers. Their linebacking core, Quincy Williams and C.J. Mosley, among the best backers that you'll find. Sauce Gardner and D.J. Reed and Michael Carter, great cornerback group. Chuck Clark is back from injury, starting at safety for them. They are as deep and talented a defense and well-coached a defense that you'll find probably in the AFC, but it would really help to add Hassan Reddick to that mix, and they could become, and a happy Hassan Reddick and a paid Hassan Reddick could take that defense from great to elite. And if you have an elite defense with a healthy quarterback, we'll see on the health of Aaron Rodgers, but elite defense with a healthy quarterback could take the Jets to back to the postseason, where they haven't been since, I think, 2009. No, was it 2010? I can't remember the last time they went to the playoffs, but it's been a long time.
And that's the thing, is the Jets are set up to be really good if everything clicks. And I think there's, you know, there's a couple things, and obviously the health of Aaron Rodgers, but Hassan Reddick, if he's not there, that's a big piece of them not, you know, not getting to where they want to be, because he was brought in for a reason. Robert Saleh looked at him and said, look, we're missing this type of piece. We saw what Saleh had when he was with the Niners, and he had guys like Nick Bosa, and he had guys that could get after the passers. Like you said, Hassan Reddick, not on that level, but he's a really good player that's going to get after the quarterback. And then you are right, you have so much other stuff on that defense. Sauce Gardner, one of the most, you know, the best cornerbacks in the league. That defense can be elite, and then if you get any type of play out of Aaron Rodgers in the offense, that's going to be a good team. It's kind of like my USC comparison in college football, where that offense, I think, is always going to be elite. If you can have the defense be average, that's a team that can win 8-9 games. I think for the Jets, if you can get that offense to be average and you have that elite defense, well, they can win 10-11 games and make the playoffs, and then yeah, you know, you get Rodgers in a one-game situation. You don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'll take anyone over Aaron Rodgers in a one-game situation in the NFL still at his age and his productivity that he's had in the past. So you got to get there, but in order to get there, you may need a guy like Hassan Reddick to get to that elite defense.
My last random thing is Oregon, obviously number 3 in the AP poll, but they also get a big win in recruiting as well. Just about an hour ago, they landed Cody Green. He's an offensive tackle. He is the 31st ranked player in the 2026 class. So that makes him, what, a rising junior this year. So he's about to enter his junior year of high school. He is 6'6", 290-pound offensive tackle from Matter Day in SoCal. And he is committed to the Oregon Ducks. He's the highest-rated member of the Ducks 2026 class and the fourth member of that class as well. He is the brother of Caden Green, who is a freshman defensive back at Washington. So Cody Green, originally from Sammamish, Washington, I guess transferred to Matter Day. And this will be his first year at Matter Day as a junior. So you're talking about a guy that started his high school career up in the state of Washington, transferring basically to play his junior and senior seasons, presumably at Matter Day. A 6'6", 290-pound tackle. and he is committed today to the Oregon Ducks, who beat out Michigan, USC, and Washington for this four-star prospect. Add another pelt to the wall, and we'll see if this commitment becomes a signing. But at the same time, this is just another one of Dan Lanning's cigar flexes. He got the top-rated tackle in his 2026 class, and he's got him committed ahead of the 2024 season. Good for him.
Yeah, and the 6'6", 290, like you said, the type of athlete that they're getting now at Oregon is a different level than what they've always gotten before. And so that's what is the optimism that we have, or at least I have, in the Oregon Ducks program this season is a lot because of the type of athlete they're getting. It's a different level that they've been recruiting under Dan Lanning, and they were doing a really good job with Mario Cristobal, and Lanning is taking that thing to another level, and now he's getting the high schoolers to go along with, you know, the elite transfer portal classes as well. You know, Lanning's got this recruiting thing unlocked right now, and he is on fire on the recruiting pass. Whether it's NIL or not, it shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter if it's Uncle Phil giving Dan Lanning, saying, you know, here's some money, go get this guy. It shouldn't matter because that's legal now. You can pay players, and Oregon is embracing that. And I think it's great that you have, as a Duck fan, you have Phil Knight in your back pocket that says, look, if you need a guy, let's go get this guy. It's okay. That's what we're here for. Oregon needs to embrace that. I think they're kind of starting to turn that page and say, yeah, we are embracing Phil Knight, and he is our guy. And, you know, everyone else can kind of just, you know, pound sand, I guess. Like, we got Phil.
I was so curious how you're going to land it, and you got to pound sand, which is a great thing to say. I really like pound sand.
We got Phil. You don't got him. And it's great to have Phil Knight, I will tell you that.
It's also a win for Alik Terry, who's the offensive line coach with Oregon. And it kind of makes me wonder a little bit who the what was the name of the O-line coach at Oregon that ended up, didn't he go to New England to work with Belichick? And he left Oregon early, and I'm trying to remember his name, but that didn't quite work out the way that he probably would have hoped. And here comes Alik Terry, who's a young guy, and he is doing great things on the O-line, both in teaching technique and recruiting big-time players. That's a win on the 2026 class. The 2025 class for Oregon already includes the number one center in the country in Alai Kalaniuvalu and tackle Zier Addison and guard Dimitri Manning, who are all commits, all set to sign with Oregon later this year, all to be freshmen next year in 2025, currently the sixth-ranked class in ESPN's 2025 recruiting rankings. And now 2026 is looking pretty darn good with four-star running back Tre'Darrion Ball, quarterback Jonas Williams, four-star defensive tackle Tony Cumberland, and now this 6'6", 290-pound offensive tackle from Matter Day, Cody Green. And next 2 years looking pretty stacked. You remember when Mario Cristobal said, hey, I'm leaving the cupboards full for you there, Dan, or whoever the next coach is going to be. No, there's some puppies in there. There's some puppies. Those puppies are getting even bigger, man. Puppies are now, like, no longer, you know, little dogs that are, they'll mature into themselves. They're full-on Mastiffs, what Dan Lanning's bringing in now.
They are.
They're about to grow into the beasts from the Sandlot.
And Lanning's adding some friends to go along with it, too. Some other dogs around the neighborhood to bring into, you know, the Oregon Duck.
The Ducks have never more looked like dogs. I've never seen a more dog-looking duck. Except Duck fans will be like, please use a different word.
They got that dog in
them. D-A-W-G.
D-O-G.
D-O-G.
Just to clarify.
D-O-double-G. What'd you think of Snoop at the Olympics? Was that...
Well, Snoop Dogg, he has made one of the best transitions ever, I think. Like, to go from a guy who was charged with murder to now, like, a beloved figure, like, for the Olympics, like, a beloved world figure is insane in my mind. Like, there was a time back in the 90s when Snoop Dogg was looked at as, like, a really bad guy.
Can I tell you something? I forgot about that.
And now he's looked at as like this fun, lovable character who just says funny things. And I love Snoop Dogg. I think he's great. I'm with everybody. I love watching Snoop. It's just one of the biggest transitions I've seen in the world. And it's very impressive what he's done with his career and his life.
I mean, Ray Lewis is up there. Marvin Harrison.
People forget about what Marvin Harrison did.
Although I will say, Marvin has not come close to the back to the likability meter. That right. At least Ray has worked his way back. Like,
but like Snoop like Ray, is left.
Forget. Like Snoop, but people love Snoop
worldwide.
Like, I mean, he's the head of the Olympics.
He was like the official like fan of the Olympics this year.
I totally forgot about the dark side of the moon there. The dark side of the dog.
That's every time I see Snoop Dogg, that's what I think.
I'm glad because you're able to remind me. The other day, I thought that one song, that epic song.
Basketball. The basketball
song. I thought that was from Little Bow Wow and Like Mike, and you set me straight. And I'm glad that you set me straight because Little Bow Wow's Like Mike, key movie in my childhood, fourth grade is not the same without that movie. Tracy Jordan, Lil Bow Wow, Like Mike, and basketball is my favorite sport. Love the way they dribble up and down the court. And then you told me.
Curtis Blow.
It's from Curtis Blow. And it blew my mind. So I appreciate you setting me straight on that, getting my history right, and reminding me that Snoop Dogg has not always been a great person. And he's a USC fan, so how great of a person could he be?
Wasn't, you know, he didn't get convicted of murder, so.
No.
So maybe he is a great.
And neither did Ray Lewis, did he?
No. But, you know.
I mean, this is fine.
Deer antler spray, too. Remember that, right before the Super Bowl.
Big time. And I'm pretty sure he is the one that pulled the plug on the lights.
Why? What's the theory on that?
I don't know. The deer antler spray got into some outlet.
But they won.
Shut the whole they won, that's right. And that actually worked against them, I forgot. Good times. So those are our three random things, and that got pretty random in a big way. But I hope Jordan Chiles is doing all right and feels better.
Just give her a bronze back.
Just get her bronze back, somebody. That's ridiculous. The Jets and Hassan Reddick, that is ridiculous. And if the Jets didn't see this coming, shame on them. If they did, we'll see how that works out. And the Ducks dominant on the recruiting trail once again. Cody Green. 2026 class, Mater Dei, 6'6" tackle coming to Oregon in 2 years, assuming that he signs and someone else doesn't offer him more NIL money and Phil doesn't pass away by then. If all those things happen, recruiting's going to be awesome for a while in Eugene. All right, we'll go to break and come back, do a little punch at audio and more. Give away some tickets as well. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. Got some great sound that we want to unload here. Let's play a little punch it audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Bill Belichick making the rounds as part of the media now. He says that it's getting hard to play your quarterback in the preseason. Punch it.
It really just depends on your team. You know, if you're going to put your starting quarterback out there, you probably want to put him out there with your starting offensive line. You want to put him out there with, you know, receivers that he's going to be thrown to. So if your depth is not good at those positions at that particular point in time, maybe you got a couple of guys banged up or whatever, you know, then is it really worth it? And on top of that, you have to spend time preparing for your opponent, right? You don't know what they're going to do. So I don't think you want to play, you know, your starters for five plays. That doesn't really do any good. You want to maybe leave them out there for, you know, 20, 25 plays, something like that. Well, that involves preparation time, and that's maybe 2 or 3 days of practice. And I'd say with the shortened, you know, training camp time frame now, that's a little harder to do than what it was in the past. I remember when I was, you know, with the Giants and you had 3.5 weeks of training camp, you know, you could take 3 days to prepare for your first preseason game and play your guys, you know, 20 plays a game or so and, you know, let them get into it. Well, now it's hard to get those days.
This is Belichick on McAfee, Stephen. Is that right?
Yes, that is.
I like it. I like him talking football, and I think he's going to be good in media, and he's going to be good with McAfee. He's kind of right. I mean, it's hard to find like a sweet spot for your starting quarterbacks in the preseason, because what's the point of getting Joe Burrow out there for five plays when you don't want to injure him or leave him exposed to injury? But does five plays really do you any good from a rep standpoint for a guy like that?
But we've seen the last few years, especially in the NFL, how sloppy the games are in the first couple weeks of the season. Wouldn't it make sense to throw your guy out there and let him play so you get the sloppiness out of you? And then when by week one, you're not the sloppy team, your opponent is the sloppy team, and maybe you can get a couple wins you're not expecting, or you're at least going to play better. Like, I don't know. Like,
how often does he need to, or how long does he need to play to get that sloppiness out?
Right. That's the question.
You got to beat the sloppy right out of him.
You got to get the sloppy out of you. But that's the question, is how long does it take to get all that slop out of you? And nobody actually knows. There's no secret number.
The slop meter varies from person to person.
And Belichick's right.
It's from sty to sty. I mean, it's, the slop's going to differ.
If you're offensive line and you're going backup offensive line, yeah, I don't want to put Joe Burrow out there behind the backup offensive line. The starting offensive line can't even block for him. What is the backup's going to do? So it is a math problem that no one yet has figured out in the NFL, of how can you play preseason games, keep everyone healthy, and then, you know, not be sloppy at the start of the year if you're going to rest guys.
Mariners had Sunday Night Baseball in town for the first time in 20 years. They made the most of it. Punch it.
Careful for Raleigh, who's already got one. He steps in.
First pitch swinging three times in a row and two consecutive swings go Yahtzee, Yahtzee. Three-run shot, five ribby for Cal. And the Mariners just trashed the Mets. I mean, the American League, so much better than the National League. I mean, here come the Mets. Wild card running into Seattle. 3 days later, they've been outscored 22-1. Bam!
I always think it's funny when... Then this happens for the Blazers, too, when they get, like, a national game on TNT or ESPN or ABC, whatever it is, like, in the playoffs. And you get, like, the national announcers doing the games. They act like they're so shocked that, you know, a team up in the Northwest could be good. Like, they've never heard of, like, they've never heard of Cal Raleigh before. Like, the dude is the big dumper that hits homers. Like, let's not act like this guy sucks. He's one of the, you know, he's the best power hitting catcher in the entire game. Yeah, they're like, oh, who is this guy?
Oh my God, they play baseball up here?
And that happens for the Blazers too. Like,
totally.
Even during the Dame era, it was just like, oh my gosh, who is this?
And look at the fans. Oh my God, they have fans here.
It drives me
nuts. They're going crazy.
And you're 20 years they have been on Sunday Night Baseball. It drives me nuts when this happens. But yeah, good for the Mariners. Hopefully that continues to get some more Sunday Night games. Because I tell you what, the sun was out. Safeco. T-Mobile looked beautiful on Sunday night. Like, it looked great.
Looked great,
how Portland would look on a Sunday night game.
Can you imagine that?
No, I can't. That'd be amazing.
I can't.
It'd be amazing. I don't even want to think about it because it makes me sad.
By the way, Mariners, the Astros swept the Red Sox, so thanks for nothing, Bastin. But Astros and Mariners still tied atop the AL West now, even after all of the four-game win streak for Seattle. Houston's won five in a row. Series at the Tigers starts tomorrow. Bo Nix. Good preseason outing out of Bosif. This was really nice to see. Talked about his first NFL preseason game with the Broncos, in which he completed 15 passes of his 21 attempts, 125 yards, and a touchdown. Punch it.
It was a good day. I thought we ran the ball efficiently, made some good plays in the pass game, converted some third downs, got points when we needed to. It was a good job. Going into half with points and then coming out with points, felt like that was a good point in the game. But overall, felt like we did a good job. Huge team win.
Keaton Slovis played in this game for the Indianapolis Colts. I'm looking at the box score.
Do you know where Keaton Slovis played last season?
BYU.
JT Daniels, you know where he played last season?
Who?
JT Daniels, another USC quarterback. He played at Rice last year. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, no, I did know that, but in my head I was thinking Jaden Daniels.
No, JT Daniels.
This is a trick question. I know Jaden Daniels played at LSU.
But how about...
You said JT Daniels. JT.
I said it quickly.
JT Daniels, when he came out of Matter Day, he was so hyped.
Well, he was going to be the answer at Georgia.
17-year-old freshman, reclassified. Was he at Georgia first?
No, he went to USC.
He was USC
and
first.
And was good.
He was okay, yeah.
He was good, and then he went to Georgia, and they're like,
Georgia,
this is the
then
guy.
Get the hell out, and then he landed at Rice. Was there another school in between there for JT Daniels. This is why I can't get on board with recruiting stuff for guys like JT frickin' Daniels. And where the hell is this guy now? And
six college seasons.
And he totally...
He was at West Virginia for a season.
That's right.
Before he went to Rice.
All right. So can we reset it again? It was Matter Day, USC.
Georgia. West Virginia.
Rice. Rice, bro. Rice. The dude went to Rice.
But how about Bo Nix?
And he was like the most hyped quarterback of all time out of high school. What the hell are we doing?
Let's talk Bo Nix then. Because we'll talk about a guy that actually deserves to be talked about. Bo looked good. I tell you what, he had the touchdown pass. It was a 1 yard little pass in the flat, but he fired it in there, showing off some arm strength. That was kind of the question going into the draft was, well, can he get the ball, you know, down the field? Well, It wasn't down the field, but it was a nice shot from the middle of the field right to the pylon, and it was right on target. And I tell you what, Bo looked like he was in charge of the offense. He sounds like an NFL starting quarterback with just his press conferences, all that kind of stuff. He had a couple nice runs. I believe they scored on 4 drives when he was in the game. Can't get much better than what Bo Nix had as his first start in the preseason for the Denver Broncos. I still expect him to start week 1 against the Seahawks, but we'll see what happens. I can't imagine that they're going to draft that guy and have him look the way he looks and then say, no, we're going to go with Jarrett Stidham. You're going to see here on the bench, Bo. I think Bo starting week 1 in Seattle will be fun.
Would it be any different if they had Jacoby Brissett there like New England does instead of Stidham or Wilson? Because... like a Jacoby, he's the best bridge quarterback you can get in the NFL now. Like, he's not a bad quarterback.
No.
He's what Teddy Bridgewater, you know, used to do before he retired, is be the 1 year plug gap.
Joe Flacco.
Flaxster is here too. By the way, the Flaxster is in Indianapolis as well.
Yeah.
Along with Keaton Slovis.
I just think, I think even if they had a better backup, like, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Joe Flacco, they're still going Bo Nix. Like, I think Sean Payton is tied to Bo Nix, and I think he's put his future tied to him of this second act of his coaching career. He had a great first act with the Saints, won a Super Bowl, kind of flamed out just with the way the team went and how, you know, the bounty gate and all that kind of stuff kind of went away. He had a bad first year with Denver. Russell Wilson experiment did not work. Now, he didn't want Russell, but it didn't work out. I think he wanted Bo Nix. He targeted Bo Nix from everything I saw. Bo Nix was the number 2 quarterback on their list after Caleb Williams. Like, they had Bo over Jaden Daniels and Drake May and J.J. McCarthy. So we'll see, man. I just think they're kind of tied together, and he's going to go with Bo. And Bo looks like he had a good grasp of the offense. And it's exactly what we thought it would be. It was short passes, quick passes, get it out, let the guys make plays. That's what he did at Oregon. That's what Drew Brees did for the Saints. That's kind of what it looked like. You know, not to the Drew Brees level, but a lesser extent of Drew Brees of the Saints was Bo Nix with the Broncos.
Trying to look see what Troy Franklin did, but he only got 1 target in this game. So I don't know how many snaps he ended up playing or not, but hopefully Troy does some big things in camp as well. We'll bounce to break and come back. And when we do, we'll hear some Dan Lanning sound, some Adam Schefter as well talking Bo. And we haven't even talked about the Olympics. Steph Curry going off on Saturday as well. But let's give away some tickets. Beach Boys coming August 24th, Hayden Holmes Amphitheater. Boy, August 24th is coming up. That's a Saturday, if I believe. Yeah, that's a week before college football games.
It's week 0, baby.
So Beach Boys making the rounds. They're coming to Hayden Holmes Amphitheater a week before college football. So they're making sure that they get in before everybody's sitting at home watching some football. So caller number 4 right now at 503-417-7575. Pair of tickets, Beach Boys, Hayden Holmes, August 24th. You're welcome. More of the show coming up on the Bald Faced Truth.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, the good news, if you didn't win the Beach Boys tickets, we'll have another pair to give away either later in the show or tomorrow. Not entirely sure which yet. The Luke Combs tickets, people lost their minds last week with Luke Combs. So, good news for those people that love Insanity, we have another pair to give away this week as well. So you and I, Stephen, will be in the chair Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. John will be back Thursday. So between now and Thursday, we'll be giving away some combers and be promoting more insanity, which is really what this job is all about.
That's what we love. We love the insanity. And, you know, shout out to Matthew in Prineville, the winner. Those Beast Boys tickets. Gave me a Go Beavs at the end.
I'm now.
Love that.
Prineville on the board. A little Go Beavs. Okay, that's good. That was one of our questions, was where the fans going to show up.
They're showing up.
Well, I mean, for Beach Boys.
Get the Beach Boys down at Reaser.
They're going to get the Beach Boys to Reaser. They'll sell out that concert because Prineville is showing the hell up. They left off of Punch It Audio talking a little bit about Bo Nix and his excitement. Adam Schefter was talking about the objective for Bo with Sean Payton.
Was the guy that Sean Payton was after the whole time. Sean Payton was mesmerized by his skill set. And this was a guy that essentially the Broncos were hoping were going to get to him. They considered even trading up to secure his services. And because of all those factors, it always felt like it was going to be Bo Nix's job to lose this summer. Well, if you're going to go out and throw 15 to 21, throw for a touchdown, lead four scoring drives, that's not losing that job. That's winning that job.
Bo is going to be the most polished prospect you could get, the most professional on and off the field, and the most knowledgeable, I would say, of this QB class. The only thing that will limit Bo Nix is bad fit with his play caller. And I'm talking about in his NFL career in general. I don't think it's a bad fit. I think it's a good fit. So you say, hey, he won't fail because of bad fit. He'll only fail because of talent and physical limitations. That's the only reason Bo Nix will fail. And we've seen guys with limitations succeed in other ways. Will Bo Nix, does he have enough athleticism, enough arm strength to be able to deploy his other assets, his knowledge, his experience, his professionalism, his leadership, his ability to execute? That's the big question with this guy. Early returns, one preseason game, not even a full game, handful of snaps. And Bo is passing with flying colors already. Steven, was this not predictable?
A lot of people are jumping off the moon, jumping up to the moon for this one.
Jumping
to the moon, sorry.
Over the moon? Or?
Over the moon.
Okay.
To it, over it, whatever. They're jumping high for
you
Bo
Nix. Jump off the moon, he's that good.
They love him.
Honestly.
They love a Bo Nix performance. And I think it was. I think you're right. I think it was a little predictable that he was going to be good in the preseason because of all the things you just talked about. We saw what he did at Oregon and his crazy numbers, his completion percentage. That's going to translate in the preseason because those guys are not real NFL players. Those are guys that are competing for spots. They're not the guys that are going to be starting week one, a lot of them. And so I need to see it against the real professionals, you know, the first team of the Seattle Seahawks who don't even have a great defense, but I need to see that.
Whoa.
They're fine. Yeah, not great.
I thought we were getting along pretty well so far.
But does the Bo Nix outing, because you're right, it didn't surprise me, but there was the touchdown pass that looked really good. He had a couple scrambles where he ran and got a couple yards. Does it change your mind on the Broncos' outlook for the season? 5.5 wins, the win total, really low. Not a lot of expectations, but I feel like Sean Payton's got to win at some point, and Bo Nix is his guy that he's going to try to win with. I mean, is it weird to think that I think the Broncos may be, you know, 8 wins if everything breaks right for them?
I thought 5.5 was low. I agree with you. So I would take the over.
It's plus money right now. You can get over 5.5 at plus 105 DraftKings.
So that's just people thinking
division's
too tough.
The division's good. I mean,
everybody loves the Chargers.
And the Chiefs are the Chiefs.
I mean, the Chiefs are the Chiefs, but I'm telling you, like, new kid on the block. People are christening the Chargers as the new kid on the block.
And the Raiders win totals at 6.5, juice towards the over. So they're projected to get 7 wins.
No, under for the Raiders. I don't see a team with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew winning more than 7 games.
And Gardner Minshew did it last year with the Colts.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the Colts compared to the Raiders? I mean, I like Shane Steichen, and Antonio Pierce is just, I think the Raider defense is going to play their asses off.
Are we getting a little too excited over Bo Nix after one preseason game?
Well, I am not changed. I like I said, I expected kind of this, and at the end of the day, it's just one data point. The data point is preseason against vanilla defenses
and
backups.
The royal we, though, you know, the general. Because there's a lot of talk today. The national media.
It seems like people. It seems like the propping up of Bo Nix today, the weekend reactions is a little inflated compared to the reality. But I'm also okay with that because we like Bo Nix.
I like Bo Nix too. And national media is hyping him up. The Denver media is hyping him up. And he deserves it. He had a great game. But yeah, I think it's one game in a preseason environment. It's a little too early to say,
If you make it two preseason half games, two preseason halves, I'm in on you.
But I think, you know, John's talked about this, like, and you talked about it right then. You know, Bo Nix is going to be ready to play in the NFL in week one. Like, he's going to probably be more successful than Jayden Daniels or maybe even Caleb Williams because he's just more NFL ready than those guys. Eventually, those guys may be better than Bo. But right now, year one, maybe Bo Nix is the best quarterback in the class.
Caleb did some things, too. We haven't talked about him yet. He looked all right. We'll give away some more tickets coming up in our final hour, plus the 5 at 5 and a lot more. Less than 3 weeks from Ducks Beefs kicking off at Reaser and Autzen. Final hour, Bald-Faced Truth coming up.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano. Here's Jude and Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
5 at 5 coming up. Talk some more NFL. The Seahawks preseason opener went without a hitch. No Geno. No problem. Sam Howell looked all right, in my opinion. Hard for me to take any big conclusions away from preseason. Although Stephen, Jude Anubi, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Canzano. Stephen, the projected point totals in these preseason games is pretty hilarious. I don't think I've seen anything north of 35.
It is wild. Doesn't it just go to show you how much better like actual starting quarterbacks are than backups or the backups are? Because I mean, they're going against second team defenses. It's not like they're going against the top defenses, but
yeah,
the defenses always dominate the preseason. So
they're not complicated defenses either. They're pretty vanilla stuff.
The NFL preseason is kind of unwatchable.
It's not great. I'll be honest, I didn't even watch that much of the Seahawks game. I've got a buddy of mine, good college buddy. He's in Memphis now, but one of my diehard Hawk fans. And he's like blowing me up. He's like, dude, we are running the ball so well. And I'm like, wait a second. It's preseason, right? Week one? I'm like, it's a little early for we're running the ball so well texts, but I get it. People are excited. They're enthused.
And maybe it's different because I don't necessarily have like a team. Like, I love the Jags. Like, well, I don't know if I love them, but the Jags
you're
are kind of
a diehard Jag fan since 2017.
Blake Bortles era. Hey, I was around in the Bortles era. It was not
AFC
great.
Title trip.
But I was probably around in the Gabbard era a little bit, too.
Miles Jack fumble away from going to the Super Bowl, pretty much.
But, like, I could watch a bad college football game because at least there's going to be scoring in it and there's going to be somewhat, you know, a little bit of a better atmosphere than the preseason, the NFL. The NFL preseason is hard to watch for me. Like, I'll have it on at the studio, you know, but, like, I'm more going to catch the highlights about it.
I'm the same. Preseason is just tough. Did you know, like, back in the day, they played, like, 6 preseason games. Some teams did. There was a clip going around. Can't remember who had it, but my buddy sent it to me. It was Terrell Davis. When Terrell Davis really caught Mike Shanahan's eye, it was a preseason in the early 90s, maybe the late 80s. I don't even know. I think it was the early 90s, though. It had to have been the early 90s. It was a preseason game. The Broncos were playing the 49ers in Tokyo, and Terrell Davis was running. He was on kick coverage. And he was blowing guys up on kick coverage. And Mike Shanahan's like, oh my God, that is my guy. And then Terrell Davis, you know, actually became a Hall of Fame running back.
Do you think coaches would want more preseason games just to get more tape on guys? Or they just
probably, because they don't give a crap about players.
Yeah, they love it.
I mean, I say that tongue in cheek.
But they don't.
Coaches want as much, you know, film and info on guys, any like little edge to make us better. You know, they're probably all for. Players are like, dude, give me one series and then let me play some actual football. That dovetails with my second kind of point to all this, Stephen. The NFL season is so long. College football is going to be so long with the expanded playoff. If you're a competing team for a title, it's a long, long season. You start literally in August and you have to win four playoff games now in addition to your regular conference schedule. Crazy talk for college kids.
I don't hate it.
I don't either. But if you're trying to project the ebbs and flows of a season for kids that age, I even worry about it for NFL teams. And like, we're really close to getting two bye, like at least there's two bye weeks in college. We're getting close to two bye weeks in the NFL, especially if they go to 18 games, which is crazy.
Are we close to the NFL having load management like the NBA?
I don't think that's crazy to think about. Maybe not load management, but snap count management, right? Yeah. So you're not straight up missing a game unless you can afford to. If you're a team with a 3-game lead in the division and you have a 40-year-old, you know, if you have a veteran offensive tackle that has a little bit of a bruised pinky toe and he could use a time off, like, you're going to sit the guy. Frankly, that happens already. That's not out and out load management where it's like, what? Kawhi sits down before the season and plots out, hey, I'm circling this date, this date, this date, this date. I ain't playing. Hell, I ain't flying. By the way, I'm pretty sure my knee flares up around that date every year. Something like that. I don't think that that happens in the NFL, and it certainly won't happen with quarterbacks, which is really the main position that matters anyway. There's too much pressure to win for that to happen, and probably too many contract incentives for that to happen. But I think versions of that are going to come up. And I was telling you before the show, nothing in preseason, I'm struggling to make any sense of it. Frankly, I'm kind of struggling to make sense of any regular season games in September. The season's so long. Like, think about what we thought about the Chiefs on Christmas last year.
Yeah.
When they're getting housed by Aiden O'Connell. That team won the Super Bowl.
I was picking against them every single week.
So what are we really even reacting for? that's kind of what last year reminded me of. And by the way, there's a chance that we look back on the Chiefs. Tell me what you think of this. And we look back on the 2023 Super Bowl that they won and are like, how the hell did we let Patrick Mahomes win that Super Bowl that year? Because that, Stephen, might be the worst Chiefs team that we will ever see going forward. And they won the thing. Like, I think they're supposed to be better this year.
I mean, they couldn't really throw the football great. They had, you know, Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. That was about it as, like, their pass catchers. Now they're bringing in Marquise Hollywood Brown. He got hurt in preseason a little bit, but he, when he's healthy, he's a good NFL player. They drafted Xavier Worthy. Rashee Rice, year two, like, he's going to get better no matter what you think about him off the field. He's a baller on the field, and he can make plays. You're right, like, this Chiefs offense is going to be great now. Well, at least better than it was last season, and you would think the defense is going to be at the same type of level they were the year before. So as long as they don't have, like, a hangover of, you know, winning back-to-back titles, which it doesn't sound like they're going to do. They sound like they're pretty motivated to win, you know, a three-peat.
I really want them to slip back and be like, hey, they're just like, I want to put them at, like, 11 wins. Which I'm pretty sure is what they got last year, 11 wins. But I don't see it. I think they're at least a 12-win team. They're just too good. And on the defensive side, they lost Aldarius Sneed, who went to the Titans. But that overall unit, like, that's just a unit I'm going to bet on with Spags. So, you know, Chris Jones, McDuffie, you know, the guys they have at linebacker and on the back end, like, the overall depth and the coaching that they have, it's like, I'm going to bet on that unit. But we'll see. You know, it's just another decade long of dominance from one team that we had to live through twice as NFL fans with the Patriots in the early 2000s and then the mid-2010s. And I just think of the Patriots and be like, man, I can't believe that franchise won that many Super Bowls with one player and one coach. And went 10 years between winning them. They won three before 2005. And then from 2014 on, they won three more. And then Tom did it again in 2000. Like, that boggles my mind. We'll see if Patrick comes close to any of that. But that's kind of the trajectory that franchise is on right now. And I think they'll be even better this year than they were last year when they won the whole thing last year anyway. All right. Let's do the 5 at 5, 5 big things you need to know today, the way we see it.
The 5 at 5.
It could be objective. It could be subjective. It really depends.
Number one.
But I had my number one ready that time. I'll stick with the Seahawks. 16-3 winners over the Chargers. Sam Howell went 16 of 27 with a touchdown, no picks. Good run in for Kenny McIntosh, seventh-round pick out of Georgia. A couple carries in there for Zach Charbonnet, though he looked like he got banged up a little bit on that opening drive. Nothing from Kenneth Walker III. Overall, defensively, the Seahawks looked very, very good. I don't think it means a darn thing, but I am really looking forward to the Seahawks. And I will say this, Steven, as tempered as I'm trying to be about my Seattle Seahawks, people in football media, a lot of them circling the Seahawks as a surprise playoff contender, maybe a surprise division contender compared to the way things went, could go for the 49ers. You asked me a question a couple weeks ago, who the best bet in the NFC West would be. You had the Niners, the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Cardinals. And I was kind of saying, well, the Cardinals probably for the value, just because I think they're better than what their odds are. But I think I have to legitimately change that answer to the Seahawks, because I do think they should have the third best odds to win in the NFC West. It should be worse than the Rams. It should be worse than the Niners. But I think the path for the Seahawks to win the division is probably a wider path than people might otherwise think right now, depending on how things go in San Francisco and LA.
You're probably right on that. I think there is a higher ceiling. And as we've gotten more into the preseason and more into training camps, the Seahawks do look like they have a chance, especially offensively, to be one of the best teams in the National Football League. Geno Smith throwing it around, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. Even guys like Jake Bobo have been really good in training camp and had nice plays. Like
Bobo had a nice year last year.
He did, and I think that they're going to probably rely on him a little bit more this season. Then you got the running game as well. Like, that offense, I think, can be really good. It's going to be a question of, can some of those defensive guys really step up and really improve their game? Denver Weatherspoon in the second season, Tariq Woolen, they've been really good players. But are they going to take that next level and get it up there? Because at some point, you have to stop teams, especially, in that, in the NFC West, because Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr., they're going to have a good offense. The 49ers and Brock Purdy, like, they're going to be really good. And then Sean McVay and Matt Stafford, they have, they've done excellent against the Seahawks, even when they're not good. Like, the Rams have been good. So I think it's all about, I know how to get on your skin there on that one, but
yeah, you're not wrong. You know the respect I have for Shawnee Mack over there.
It's all about the defense for the Seahawks. Like, they have to have those guys take the next step. I think they can, but if they want to get to that division level.
They also have a scheme behind them that's, they went from behind the times to trying to adapt with the times, but not quite adapting, to now being on the forefront of the future on defense. Like, six teams are running the Baltimore scheme now, but Seattle has the guy that invented it, pretty much. And so did the Mike McDonald defensive scheme that's taking over the NFL in much the same way the Shanahan McVay offenses took over the NFL and proliferated with all their assistants getting coordinator and head coaching jobs elsewhere. Seattle has the guy. They have the origin of the defense, and at some point that has to matter, and we'll see if it matters right away or if this is a unit and a team that takes some time to realize their potential.
Number two.
Boston Red Sox and Major League Baseball have suspended all-star outfielder Jaron Duran for 2 games after he yelled an anti-gay slur at a fan during the team's loss on Sunday to the Astros. He'll begin that suspension tonight. Red Sox announced that his salary will be donated to PFLAG. It was in the sixth inning. Jalen Duran was coming up to bat at Fenway Park. The fan was yelling.
I think you said Jalen Duran just now. I think you mean.
I did. Jaron. Sorry.
Jalen's a Piston?
Yeah, he's the basketball player. Jaron Duran. The fan was yelling at him that he needs a tennis racket to hit the ball. And Duran looked at him and yelled, "Shut up, you bleeping F word. For gay." And so he that was caught on the mic, and Duran said he immediately turned and apologized to plate umpire Jordan Baker and to the Houston catcher Yainer Diaz. He said, quote, "For my actions, they were right there. They heard me say it. I'm assuming they cut the mic because of the inappropriate word," and quote, now he didn't apologize to the fan. Now, the suspension is in line with past discipline from Major League Baseball of anti-gay slurs. Matt Joyce of the A's back in 2017 got 2 games for directing an anti-gay slur at a fan. Kevin Pillar, he was suspended 2 games for a slur similar to what Duran used towards the Atlanta pitcher Jason Mott. And then in 2012, Blue Jays infielder Yunel Escobar got a 3-game suspension for an eye black stickers with the anti-gay slur in Spanish on them. I'm all for athletes yelling back at fans that are heckling them, but can't we come up with a better word than that? I mean, we're 2024. I get it. No matter what your views are, there's better words to use than that.
Yeah, frankly, there's just better comeback categories than that.
I'm all for Durant yelling at the fan and saying, saying something back to him.
I actually think the fan, the tennis racket,
it's good.
That's a good one.
It's a good one.
You need a tennis, like, come on, Durant.
Come back with something more impressive.
You play in Boston. How do you have such thin skin?
There's a few words that
you're
really
an all-star MVP. You don't need to have that thin skin.
It's a few words that really bothered me that I get offended by. That is one of them. And I'm not very easily offended by a lot of things, but there are a couple things, and that's one of them. It's just come up with a better word. Like, you can yell at them. I'm fine with that. You can make fun of people. You can talk trash. Just don't use that word. It's not appropriate in 2024 anymore.
No, it's certainly not. And I'll be interested to see if there's ever a second offense. Does it go any longer than 2 games, right? Like, how serious does the league want to take this? But I'm with you. I think the more interaction between players and fans, the better. You know, I don't anticipate a Ron Artest situation anytime soon in Major League Baseball. Maybe that's another reason they have more protective netting. But tennis racket is a great heckle. If that's really what the guy heckled, I mean, that's timeless. You know, that's great.
It is what he said. You can hear him say he needs a tennis racket.
Oh, shame on Durant, man. Come on. That's bad.
Number three,
U.S. men's basketball wins gold. And Jason Tatum hardly plays. And he said the limited role for USA this summer, he says, will not affect his decision to play for the national team in the future. Tatum did not play in 2 of the 6 games at the Olympics, including the semifinal against Serbia. Off the bench, played 11 minutes in the gold medal game against France. 2 points, 3 rebounds. He said, it was a tough personal experience on the court, but I'm not going to make any decision off emotions. If you ask me right now if I was going to play in 2028, it is 4 years from now, and I would have to take time and think about that. So I'm not going to make any decision based off how this experience was or how I felt individually. Steven, you obviously were watching this team. I was able to watch the semi and gold medal game. Are we making too big a deal of the Jason Tatum not playing stuff, or where do you come out on that?
Yes, 100%. We're making too big of a deal of it. Maybe it's just Celtics fans, and maybe it's Boston again that is just terrible. Jason Tatum, you want to know what he shot in the Olympics on jump shots, Judah? 0 for 16. Tell me where he deserves to play. Devin Booker bought into the role as being the fifth guy in the starting lineup, or the fourth guy in the starting lineup, and he excelled. We saw that in the gold medal game. Devin Booker was awesome. He could shoot the ball better than Jason Tatum. He was making plays. He was playing really good defense. Tatum couldn't make a shot, and he was pouting on the bench. Like, why does he deserve to play? He doesn't deserve to play. I hate the fact that he had his mom. You know, his mom's coming out there and saying, you know, he should have been playing. Other, you know, fans are saying he should have been playing, especially Boston fans. It's just, watch the games, and he didn't deserve to play. It's fine. He's a really good player. He won an NBA championship. He's the best player on an NBA championship team. Jason Tatum is. I think he's a great player. He did not deserve to play on this USA team. The other guys were better. When he was out there, the team was worse. It's easy and simple as that. He got the gold medal. I hope he comes back for 2028. If he wants to play on that team, he deserves to, because he's that good. He's one of the top 12 players in the United States. But he did not deserve to play in this Olympics games. He was bad in this Olympics. That happens. It's okay. We're just getting a little too overdramatic about it, of saying, you know, just because we're a Boston Celtics fan or whatever, that he deserved to play.
Bob Cousy, I just love this. Bob Cousy spoke about it. He went to Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe. Now, if you think that was a phrase to a story from 1974 and not 2024... I would believe you as well. Bob Cousy giving a story to Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe. But even Bob Cousy is talking about this. 96 years old. He said, this isn't just a snub. This is an embarrassment for that poor kid all over the expletive world. The Olympics have gotten that big. everyone's going to think that there's something wrong with this kid. Man.
Well, that's on the people if they think that something's wrong with Jason Tatum. He is a hell of a player.
But I will say, the stage of the Olympics is a different kind of stage.
It is.
And maybe I didn't even appreciate that enough, like seeing them win the gold medal and all the reaction that's come out of it. So the converse of that big of a stage and you are a negative storyline tends to have an outsized impact. Like, we'll be talking about Jason Tatum, depending on how the rest of his career goes, as somewhere on his Wikipedia pages, he did not play very much at all in the U.S. dramatic gold medal, you know, run in Paris. Where it falls on that Wikipedia page, I guess we'll see, right? It's kind of like Scottie Pippen's moment when he, you know, didn't get the ball late and they went to Kukoc. And, like, people make fun of Pippen even now for not tipping and for not going into the game when Phil Jackson drew up a play for Tony Kukoc.
It's just,
and his Blazers run.
No, that's true.
And maybe his Rockets run. And then he's the greatest wingman ever.
It's just, I mean, Tatum, tell me where he deserved to play on this team. There's nowhere he deserved to play.
Well, but you also see guys like freaking Derek White and Drew Holiday. And it's just like floor balance. And that's the only, it's floor balance and positional redundancy.
He didn't play in the gold medal game. And Drew Holiday is.
He played more than Jason Tatum. It's like, that can't be right. He was the last guy that they freaking called.
Drew Holiday was guarding Wembanyama numerous times in the final game because that's how good of a defender he is. Like, we underrate Drew Holiday so much. He's going to be a Hall of Famer as well.
Blazer legend.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer as well. Like, I just...
Is he really?
Yeah, 2 NBA titles, 2 gold medals, for sure. One of the best defenders ever. I think he's a for sure Hall of Famer. Tatum didn't have a spot to play on this team. It's okay. He's the 7th or 8th best player in the United States, not the 4th.
Yeah. But the media would have you believe he's the best now that he's won an NBA title. That's what it was. It's fresh off a title to not playing at all.
And I get that, but it's just...
ESPN didn't know what... They were short-circuiting. They didn't know what to do with themselves. We just hyped this guy to be the best player in the league, and he finally won his title.
Like, I don't blame...
Now he's not playing. What do we do with that?
I don't blame Tatum if he doesn't want to play in the Olympics. Like, it puts a bad taste in his mouth. I get that, because as a competitor, he wants to play. But if you're looking at it from, you know, just a point of view, like for me as a fan, there was no spot on him to play. Anthony Edwards is better. Devin Booker was playing better. LeBron, Kevin Durant.
Unless he was shooting lights out, which he was doing the opposite.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Number 4.
We talked about the Mariners earlier today about how good they've been playing after the sweep over the Mets on Sunday Night Baseball. First time in 20 years Mariners have been on Sunday Night Baseball. Cal Raleigh, 2 homers. Well, the Mariners locked in a 2-year extension to one of their newest players that has been a big part of the team. Victor Robles, the outfielder, has signed a 2-year extension with the Seattle Mariners. It'll be a team option for the 2027 season. 27-year-old signs a 2-year, $9.75 million contract extension for the 27-year-old after they claimed him off of waivers from the Nationals. Justin Hollander, manager of baseball operations for the Mariners and executive vice president, he said since joining the Mariners, Victor has been a dynamic presence on the field and a great fit in our clubhouse. He showcased the ability to impact the game in all phases, so they're excited about him. He had a funny play on Sunday Night Baseball where he was mic'd up talking to the announcers. They hit a ball to him. He goes, hold on, I got to make this catch. And then he went and made the catch and threw it in. He's been a real spark plug for that team since joining the Mariners, batting .303, 3 homers, 10 steals. He was a failure with the Nationals 8 years with them, batted .236 with 31 homers after being one of the more highly hyped prospects for Washington. Failed there, but seems like he found a home in Seattle. Seattle kind of buying low still on Victor Robles. So if it's one of these things where he turns out to be a good player, it's going to be a good contract. Seems like Mariner fans are all excited about this one.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You need to have some diamonds in the rough hit for you. Pardon the pun. And he also turned this double play that was sweet. There was a Jorge Polanco diving behind the bag at second, glove flip to Robles, did the little bare hand, you know, just touch the bag with your right foot and turn the double play 4-6-3. That was just sweet. He's best double play you'll see.
He's been a huge player for the Mariners. Like, energy-wise, he's brought a lot of energy. So it's, I think it's a great move.
Credit Jerry DePoto. Just so savvy. So good, you know?
Bag 54%. Jerry DePoto, but it was a good move.
54% of his moves hit. Yeah, good for Jerry.
Number 5.
The U.S. and China, they tied for the most gold medals at the Olympics. Each country won 40 gold medals. Now, the U.S. was a heavy betting favorite to claim the most gold medals. The women's team beat France yesterday by a point in the final event of the Olympiad. U.S. garnered approximately 64% of the betting money wagered on the gold medal market. So sportsbooks are taking varying approaches to settling bets on which country would win the most gold medals. And apparently ESPN Bet, DraftKings, FanDuel, they each settled the gold medal bets with a dead heat rule, meaning half of the amount of the bet is paid out at the odds offered. What do you think of all this? Did you get in on the most gold medals won by a country action?
I did not. I like the dead heat rule. I think that's perfectly fair. That's what they kind of do in golf when you pick a top five or a top 10. And there's so many guys that tie to be in the top 10 that it's a dead heat rule. So it divides how many players get it by your win. So I think that's fair on that part. Better than just saying it's a draw or it's a push, no bet. Get that win out there because, you know, it's one of those things where it's either or, right? Like you picked USA over China or China over the USA. So I'm down with that. I'm down with that decision that the sportsbook had. And I did not, though. I did not get down on that action. I was betting on the Olympics, but I did not bet on total gold medals there.
BetMGM gave the United States its gold medal tiebreaker, sent because it won more silver medals than China. And so that's they gave it to the United States as the most golds.
Gotta check the house rules on your sportsbook.
Well, I love that. I love that. The sportsbook director, Chris Andrews, said on social media the handle was relatively small for that one. The largest Olympic upset, do you know what that was over the games?
Yeah, if they were to lost a lot of money, they would not have settled it that way. No, I do not know.
Balance beam, 80-1
Whoa.
Winner. Italy's Alicia D'Amato.
I tell you what, if my kids are ever in the Olympics, I don't care what they are, what their odds are, I'm betting on them. That's my dream. That's my dream. That's always been my dream. Like, I want them to play a college sport just so I can bet on them.
How cool would that be? The proud dad moment. The proud degenerate
dad
moment.
The old Joe Burrow story. You know, his dad, he bet on him to win the Heisman, like $50,000 on him to win the Heisman, and he wasn't hyped up, you know, that senior year. And then he had the huge year, so he was like 50-1 to win the Heisman. His dad bet like 50 G's on him.
Dad Burrow has 50 G's just to bet on his no-name kid to win the Heisman trophy?
Joe Burrow's getting money probably from, you know, LSU.
Odell, apparently.
They're just getting money. Yeah, it didn't matter. I mean, that was before NIL, but they're still getting money out there.
A little shades. Simone Biles was a -175 favorite to win beam. She did not win beam. The Italy gal did and was the biggest upset of the Olympics. Did you see that? We haven't talked about this yet. Have you seen the Australian breakdancer? I couldn't get through my weekend.
She had a video that came out that she's.
Oh, she did.
She's being very, very funny in it. And
okay.
Satire. So.
All right.
Yeah, the breakdancing just didn't live up to the hype. A lot of bad moves.
Or maybe it did. I mean, it's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, but not in the good way.
We'll talk about that a little bit more on the other side. In the final hour, Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Cazzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Cazzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Cazzano. John will be back Thursday, and then it's the push to college football's regular season. Games in Ireland on the 24th, week zero. Ducks Beavs in action August 31 against the Idaho State Bengals and the Idaho Vandals. I'm pretty sure I have it right now. The Bengals play the Beavers and the Vandals play the Ducks. Believe that's right. Okay, got it. Keep the bees together. Bengals, Beavers, and then Vandals, Ducks. Also, I could just say the state teams play each other. Idaho State, Oregon State, right? That makes sense.
Yes.
Oregon, Idaho.
And Oregon State starts out their season bad against the Bengals, the Aztecs, the Ducks.
Okay, sorry. I just got that you did some alliteration. Bengals, Aztecs, Ducks. What do you think they do? What do you think they go in those?
I want to say I hope 2-1. I hope it's 2-1. I do have a little worry about the Sean Lewis San Diego State hire. I am high on Sean Lewis. I think he's a really good coach. And Colorado tried to make him the scapegoat. But you know what was funny about that is, you know, they were had a great offensive team. They fired him, and then he got hired like 2 seconds later by San Diego State to be their head coach.
Now it's San Diego State, not like, you
but
know.
That's a good program. They've had a lot of good history. It's
definitely not a bad one.
No, and they can get good players. So maybe not this year. I think Oregon State may be lucky they're playing San Diego State this year. If they're playing them next year, the year after, Sean Lewis has got his guys in there, that could be a lot closer. I think it'll be a good game, though, because I do question the Oregon State quarterbacks. But defensively, I think they'll be great, and they'll be fine from week one from the get-go. So I think Oregon State gets the win down in San Diego, but I think it's going to be closer than what people might expect, and I think they're going to lose to the Ducks. So I think 2-1 has got to be the goal, and I think that's what they'll be.
By the way, San Diego State's defensive coordinator, Eric Schmidt, he previously spent 2 seasons at Washington as special teams coordinator and coach of the edge position on defense. UW said, hey, special teams coordinator, you also coach edges. And they had some good ones. Braylon Trice among a pretty good UW D line last year. So that's the guy. It'll be probably something that looks like what Washington ran down at Snapdragon Stadium, home of San Diego State, where the Beavers go week two of the season. Then, of course, we've talked about Purdue being their quote-unquote Super Bowl. They have to win that game. They definitely can't lose it. But now I'm getting a little bit more and more confident that should be a win for Oregon State the closer that game gets, because Purdue is not supposed to be very good. In the 18-team Big Ten Conference, they were picked to finish last. I think Oregon State's going to be good enough defensively to win that game 21-10 if they had to.
I think you're right. I think for me, Oregon State, the goal needs to be to win all your home games except for that Ducks game. I understand you lose to Oregon. That's fine. But win the rest of your home games. That's the Mountain West teams. That's Purdue. That's Idaho State. You got to win those games. And I think it's very important just because of how good they've been at home the last, you know, 3 seasons. You think of just the few and far between losses they've had. They lost to Washington last year. They lost to USC the year before. I mean, 2 losses in 2 seasons. You kind of got to keep that up. And the crowd has been so good. I think them playing on the CW, you know, maybe if that provides you somewhat of a larger audience, they see the crowd, they see that going on. I think that's big, you know, because it's all about staying relevant. And I don't know if they can do it. I think they have a chance to, but I think a lot of it is winning at home, not losing to the teams you're supposed to beat. And those are those home games, you know, against a Colorado State. You got to win those games or else teams are going to look down on you and say, well, this team just belongs in the Mountain West.
The CW thing, like, I'm pumped because I'm still rocking digital antenna and I know I get the CW. So I'm pumped about that ease of access in this day and age of everything streaming. You have to subscribe for literally everything. And look, I don't got endless cash to subscribe to everything. So digital antenna it is. And I'm jacked about that.
And I have it too. I love it.
I'm so jacked about that. Do you think everybody else is? Or is it going to go get some LIV Golf treatment?
Well,
I definitely don't watch LIV Golf. I'll tell you that. And I have. As I tell you, I have the CW.
I think there's always going to be an appetite for football. And for college football, especially. Now, will it be nationwide? Probably not. Will it be on the West Coast or Northwest? Maybe. But Oregon State fans and Washington State fans are for sure going to tune in. So, like, they're going to get the Washington State fans and the Oregon State fans. They'll be doing a one-off. They're not going to be watching the national game on Fox or ESPN. They're going to watch their team play on the CW, and that's where it's going to get good numbers. I don't know that it can get, you know, the whole nation around them. But they are going to get good enough numbers, and that's why I think the CW is kind of making a big move here to be a big-time player. But they're going with the forgotten teams, the forgotten leagues. They're going LIV Golf. They're going Oregon State, Washington State. I think they're trying to get in with those type of things and be like have the niche audience and then hopefully get something bigger off of that.
And, I mean, they just probably want to see if it works.
That too.
Proof of concept.
But I mean, because
can we actually,
people love live sports. Like, what else do we have to watch on TV now besides live sports? It's nothing.
That's true. So you're saying even the low hanging fruit of the best, you know, piece of the pie is still the piece of the pie that you want, right?
Yeah,
it's better than Bluey or whatever the hell else they run. Right.
It's going to get numbers. Oregon State fans are going to watch Oregon State take on Idaho State. They're not going to watch...
Especially here.
Yeah, and that's what I'm
saying.
And
to think that you could come off the golf course in Tallahassee, Florida, and pop on an Oregon State football game?
It's kind of cool.
Like, I'm not even joking. Like, that's kind of cool.
It is. Now, is it going to happen? Probably not, but, you know, it's at least possible. In the Pac-12 network, I mean, we couldn't even watch those games. That's why I think fans are excited. Like, at least they have the option and the ability to watch these games. And it's not a whole bunch of hoops you're jumping through. It's get a TV antenna, and you got the CW, you got your sports, you got your Oregon State, you got your Washington State right there on your TV.
The Australian breakdancer is, we were talking about her a little bit. You saw her routine. You saw her routine, those of you who did, to borrow a Michael Scott line. It went viral. For all the wrong reasons or the right reasons, if you're just into funny content, she's a 36-year-old Australian university lecturer known as Ray Gunn is the name that she goes by. Her name is Rachel Gunn. People kind of took her to task because her routine that she did was just kind of bizarre / hilarious. But I see it two ways. One, I did laugh a lot over the weekend watching it and seeing all the reactions people had, like putting the Seinfeld music underneath it and other captions like when you lie on your resume and then it just posted her routine. It is a very silly, odd, not technically sound routine. And I don't even watch breakdancing ever, except when I go to Blazer games and there's people doing it outside or something. So that's kind of where I come out on that. But then the other part of me is like, a 36-year-old woman can move like that? That's crazy. Even the silly stuff that she does is pretty crazy. And so she lost all three of her round robin battles by a combined score of 54-0. She didn't win a single point in her three round robin battles. At one point, she raised one leg while standing and leaning back with her arms bent toward her ears.
Good move.
I think I've done that. At another, while laying on her side, she reached for her toes, flipped over, and did it again in a move dubbed the Kangaroo.
Well, she's from Australia.
Checks out. Clips of her routine went viral on TikTok and elsewhere. Many cringed at her moves, platformed on the Olympic stage as a representation of hip-hop and break culture. So there's more in here, but I guess, Steven, it's the question we all had. It's not so much ripping her, per se, but how in the world did she qualify for the Olympics? An answer I still don't have full clarity on, so I'm working on that. But hilarious content. Is there a line, though, that we should make with the comments people are making, or did she kind of bring this upon herself? Because after all, it's the Olympics. It does matter.
She had to have known that people are going to watch, right?
Right? I mean,
especially people were interested in seeing what the breaking looked like, what the breakdancing looked like. I don't know. You know, the funniest comment I saw was, you know, my 5-year-old tells me to watch me, mom, watch me, dad, and then that's what they do.
pretty close.
My kids do that. It's not a big deal. She kind of put out a video, kind of, you know, making fun of the whole situation. I think she's playing it pretty well. I just don't have mean comments about it. Like we can all make fun of it. Don't make fun of her. Just make fun of the performance. We don't make her fun of her as a person. It's a difference there. But yeah,
she's obviously trying out comedy. So when you do your comedic comments, I'll keep it that. It just comedic and not personal.
But you know, I think the good news for me is 2028. It won't be back probably. Breaking's not gonna come back for the LA games.
I honestly didn't see any other breaking besides this
either.
Clip.
So I don't want it.
I think it could be cool. Like there's some really maybe that's
Portland Trailbreakers. You kidding me?
Oh, are you serious right now?
That was me and Coach Vaughn's first reaction was the Trailbreakers could win gold.
We need to make that happen. Come on.
They're great.
And it's in LA. We could go down, beat the
big rivalry,
beat LA. I also I think it's a little too close to gymnastics as well. Like let gymnastics take care of the acrobatic, you know, stuff on trampoline. The trampoline gymnastics is wild. so many Olympic sports that I'm pretty sure I would die if I tried it once or twice. High platform diving, I would definitely hit my head on the platform. There's no chance of that not happening. So kudos to everybody in the 40 gold medals for the United States of your America, my America. We won 40 golds and did better than China's 40 golds because we had more silvers. Thank you, BetMGM. That's what it's all about. We'll go to break and come back, take some of your calls, and finish with some Dan Lanning audio as well. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I think there's a lot of trust in both parts, right, for those guys to be where they're supposed to be and the ball to be there when they get there. So I think that's in a good spot. Yeah, I think that we were limited from an explosive play standpoint. Wouldn't be able to see some more of those. I thought the offense did a much better job on third down overall in comparison to defense and, you know, having some success there. But it's a little give and take.
So that was Dan Lanning's reactions from a scrimmage over the weekend for the Oregon Ducks at Autzen Stadium, saying, wanted more explosive plays and quarterbacks and receivers developing some trust in one another. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn, before the end of the show here in a few minutes, we'll give you another chance to win Beach Boys tickets if you didn't have a chance the first time, so stay tuned for that. Talking a little Ducks and distribution, college football in general, Craig's called in from West Lynn. Hey, Craig, how you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Doing well, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, pretty much just what you just said. I can't believe that Idaho put Oregon on their schedule. Oregon might put 100 on them. But I'm just wondering, am I going to be able to see these games? Because I don't have the Big Ten Network. I can get it, but I don't currently have it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not alone. But that question is certainly a less pressing one now than it was for the last 10 years, basically. I'm reading now. I mean, so Craig in West Lynn, I'm assuming he doesn't have either DirecTV, Dish, Verizon, Spectrum, Xfinity, a bunch of other ones. And it says the Big Ten's website says it has approximately 300 additional video providers across North America. Is Craig still there? Can we pop him back on and see Stephen, who, if you don't mind me asking, who is your provider or how do you go about watching your college football or your football in general?
Xfinity.
So it says on the Big Ten's website that it provides Xfinity. So clearly there must be a discrepancy there.
Yeah, it says you have to have a subscription when I try to bring it up.
You have to have a Big Ten Network subscription.
Yeah.
How much is that? Do you know?
See, that's the thing I don't know. I'm sure it can't be much.
The beauty of this, thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. So to answer your question, I guess it will depend. You may have to sub out for it.
According to my research here, maybe an extra $9.99 a month. Sounds like about right.
Yeah. So,
it gets like the MLB Network, NBA TV, CBS Sports, and Big Ten Network all kind of together. But $9.95 a month.
Okay, that's not bad.
I mean, you got to pay extra for it.
Yeah, I pay extra. I don't love that. Everything is going up in cost. I'm glad he called because we're at that point right now, right? We got to figure out how we're going to watch these games, because I'm kind of in a similar boat, depending on who your in-laws are and who's got what and what profile passwords you have, the days in which we live, you have to get creative and sophisticated with how you watch these games. But with that creativity and sophistication, sometimes that, niche access makes it a less comfortable viewing experience. You can't just sit your butt down on your couch, get your beer or your drink of choice and pop on the game on your TV unless you pay $10 a month. I get it. That is annoying. I guess, though, if you're a Duck fan, cost of doing business for your team still playing football in a conference that matters, you have to pay an extra $10 a month. Are you okay with that? You also see some Ducks hoops along the way. But I get it. I think that's a good call, and I appreciate it, Craig from West Lynn. Not everybody gets the Big Ten Network. Hey, we all crapped on the Pac-12 Network, but at least some of us got it. I guess it's not the case for everybody. Would you shell out $10 for that package there, Steven?
Yeah, I would. I would just because, you know, I would want to watch Oregon. I would want to watch the NBA TV. But I think that kind of this is the kind of stuff because I said this earlier.
NBA TV. Not bad.
I think I said this earlier is live sports is really the only thing we need to watch TV for. So
you're not a big show guy. You're not a big like
I can watch it on, you know, Hulu or whatever.
Well, so you have Hulu then.
Yeah, we have all of them.
In terms of what you pick, we gotta pay for everything now. I was having that conversation with somebody today. Yeah. He's like, do you watch Hard Knocks? I'm like, HBO is one of those things. As good as it is, I had to nix it.
So I just feel like, you know, for me, like I want to watch live sports, and so I'm willing to shell out a little bit extra just so I can watch it because that's kind of the one thing like I want to watch.
Yeah.
If I really want to watch a show, I can probably find a way, just like I can find a way to watch sports. But I feel like it's a lot easier just to be like, look, this game is on this channel. It's much easier to watch than to go through all the hoops of watching it live because it's never actually live.
Yeah.
If you're, allegedly using it off the internet.
Right. The creativity.
I would never.
You muster amazing imagination with your shot creation. Your shot creation has got so much imagination when it comes to watching live sports come hell or high water. Oftentimes, that's the way it goes. Price of doing business, even for the consumer.
We all got to evolve, Judah. All evolve.
Adapt to the times, do we ever. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow, 3 to 6 on the BFT and the Baldface Truth Radio Network. Just added Bend to the network recently. Shout out to all of you listening in Bend, Oregon. Beautiful country, God's country down there as well. Same to you, Roseburg, Klamath Falls, Medford, on in Medford as well. And, of course, all of our fam down in Fox Sports, Eugene, Judah Newby, and Stephen Vaughn in for John Cazzano. Caller 2 right now, 503-417-7575. If you didn't win the first time, win them now. Beach Boys, August 24th, Hayden Holmes, Caller Deuce. Get in now. We'll talk to you tomorrow.